Okay, good afternoon everybody, and welcome to this final lecture of the Author's Studio course. My name is Pertti Ahonen, and I guess I've probably met all of you, as far as I know, through one of the earlier lectures that I've been present at. So today's lecture 6, continuing on in a way from last week's lecture, which Tuomas and myself gave when we talked about edited volumes, and today I'm going to focus on monographs, particularly monographs really published in, well, what we call internationally, which basically means in this context in English, not in Finnish, so meant for kind of wider audience. Of course, they don't have to be in English, but de facto, often using another language than Finnish to publish your research does mean that. But not necessarily. There's plenty of other languages as well that are important for scholarship and publishing and research. So we'll focus on monographs, not edited volumes, but books that are written often by a single author, although they can be also co-written by several authors, of course, but not collections of separate articles, separate chapters, but a kind of coherent book in the sense of a kind of monograph, if you will. And there's some overlap, obviously, with what we talked about last week. These are not entirely separate processes at all, putting together an edited collection and writing a monograph, but there's differences as well. So what I'm going to do today is, first of all, talk about the sort of publication process on a general level, kind of what to expect, what the procedures are, how it normally works, also some of the complications and challenges. We can also exchange some thoughts on that regarding your own experiences and so on. And then I'm going to go on after that to talk a little bit more personally, kind of like Tuomas did last week when he was telling us, I think, very interestingly about some of the experiences that he's had very recently in putting together an edited collection that has just appeared now. And I'll talk about one monograph in particular that I did myself. It's a few years ago now, but I've got some supporting materials from that, such as a book proposal and so on, that I think will be useful in illustrating some of these procedures. And in fact, the main emphasis really on what I'm talking about will be on the kind of earlier stages of this process, of how you go about contacting publishers and securing a proposal, or writing a proposal and securing a contract for the book, which is kind of the initial step. After that, the process then moves forward more naturally, I guess. As usual, it's all being videotaped, which makes me nervous looking at the camera there, but it's going to be in Moniviestin, in the same place where the previous lectures, and also the slides and so on will be there as a part of the video, but I'm also going to put all of these supporting materials up separately into Moodle, so you can also access them there without having to watch this whole thing again for an hour and a half, which you may not necessarily want to do. So that's the program for today, the publication process in general, personal experiences, and particularly focusing on the sort of early stages of the process, the book proposal and things surrounding that. Right, so generally about the publication process. Obviously the kind of key thing, the main thing, the thing that it all starts from is the idea that you, the author, or group of authors have. You have an idea of, for a book, a project that you're developing or want to develop, and that's where it all gets going, your kind of intellectual property, so to speak. But to get wider exposure for those ideas and the writing that you're developing, obviously there's sort of self-publishing possibilities. You can use the internet these days to put out a lot of stuff in a way that 30, 40 years ago you couldn't. But still, to kind of get the sort of academically, internationally, mostly accepted kind of exposure, you really need to go through a publisher, or it's helpful in most cases to do that. and to find a suitable publisher for what you want to publish. So that's where it all comes from, the idea that you have, that you develop, the text that you produce, and then looking for a good match between what you are doing and the sort of publishing outlets out there that could then deliver a book based on that manuscript that you're laboring away on. And there's lots of publishers, obviously, with very different profiles. They also enjoy somewhat different levels of prestige internationally. These UFO rankings are one indicator of those kinds of things, the Finnish system of ranking publishers and publications. But there's also other ways of thinking about this. The different national categorizations don't always agree. There's differences in them. And I think it's a good idea when you're thinking about doing a book to talk to as many people as you can. If you're doing, well, as a PhD student, your supervisors will be very useful in this respect. Other colleagues, people that you may come across at conferences and other events like that. People you can talk to, maybe people who have already published books in your field, and you could ask for their suggestions about what some of the suitable places might be. Thank you. And in general, it's a good idea to contact these publishers fairly early on, or not too early on. You need to have a fairly clear idea of what the book's going to be about. But before sending a full proposal or a full manuscript, it's pretty much always a good idea to get in touch with the representatives of the publishers a bit more informally first, to tell them that you're developing something or you have a whole manuscript perhaps, to mention this to them, ask them if this is something that they might be interested in. That kind of informal contact can be very helpful. They can either tell you, no, this doesn't really work for us, or in many cases, they will encourage you to tell them more and perhaps to send them a whole proposal or eventually the entire manuscript. But some kind of initial contact, initial inquiries, I think, are always helpful for everybody concerned so that you know a bit more about the publishers, but also they can know a little bit more about you and what it is that you're wanting to do. And the editors at these publishing houses are generally very friendly and helpful kinds of people. They can also be direct. If they don't think that your book's right for them or your manuscript is right for them, they will almost certainly tell you so, but they're going to sort of do that constructively and in a constructive sort of way, and you can also then, if they are more interested, talk about developing the manuscript with them, often quite productively. So email is one good way of doing that, to give them a kind of brief but clear explanation of what you have in mind. And I put in also the word ambitious, because you don't want to be too modest about what you're doing. It's good to sort of emphasize the kind of bigger contributions that it may make, the kind of bigger debates that it links to. Perhaps it's particularly topical in terms of, I don't know, societal developments right now. But in any case, to highlight why this book matters to people other than yourself and a few other experts. And there are always, in every case, I'm sure, ways of doing that. And when you contact the publishers, it's good to bring those kinds of broader points out to them so that they can also realize, this really is important. Another good way would be to have some kind of face-to-face contact, obviously. That's pretty much always helpful in anything you do in life. If you know the people that you're emailing with or talking to, if you have some kind of contact with them, that's always helpful. And conferences are a very good place for this, for instance. Some of the kind of big international, also national conferences, you often have representatives of publishing houses and journals and so on present there. They often have like a separate room where they have their tables, where they display their books, and some editor or another from publishing houses, particular publishing houses, is present. And they're often very happy, or always really very happy, to talk to people. You can just kind of go and chat with them a little bit, say, hey, I have this idea, I'm working on my PhD dissertation, and it's nearly ready or will be ready next year or whatever, and tell them what it's about and sort of informally talk about whether what you're doing might fit with those publishers. It might well fit with it. If it doesn't, they'll often say, maybe make suggestions often about somebody else you might be better off talking with. But that kind of informal contact can be very useful as well. So either way, though, before you get the more formal process going, it's good to contact the people at the publisher that you have in mind in a somewhat more informal way via email, or if possible through this kind of personal contact, perhaps at a conference or some other event like that. Calling them on the phone out of the blue is generally not, well, it might work, but it may be a little bit less likely to be immediately productive than these other ways of approaching them first. Have you got experiences of this kind of thing yourselves so far, of contacting publisher representatives or coming across them and talking with them? Okay, I'll bring the microphone out so everyone on the recording can also hear this.
Ways I have approached the publisher. The first book I published here in Jyväskylä, it was part of my job, and it was included to my work, and the publisher came across that, beyond that that work. So it was already settled. And it was one experience of this academic writing. So, and publishing, and the next one was following that. It was also academic, and they were arranging this publisher. But on the those nonfiction books, it's very different kind of experiences. There have been publishers who have approached us authors when they are, for example, having some kind of meetings with authors and hearing about ideas, as you mentioned, I think it's comparable to conferences and so. And you discuss about your ideas and you ask if you're interested, and I'm working on it, and then it goes like just like you described. And then I have made some proposals by email, and they have had a different kind of feedback. Some of them don't think it's for their field, and some might say that this is interesting, could you tell us more about it? And there are cases where I have written a full manuscript and offered it straightly to the publisher and waited for their response. And after some time, I have made a phone call and asked, are you interested? Did you get it? And one of those was, for example, the kind of book that they had the manuscript published just a little while before that. But they said that they are very interested, and I cut the contract in 2 weeks. It was very quick process and very good process. And there are different kinds of, and I'm very interested about this academic publishing compared to nonfiction books published here in Finland, because internationally I think it's a bit different, as you mentioned last week. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Very useful, interesting experiences. And like you said, I think there's some differences, but also a lot of similarities as well, I think. Anybody else? Any particular good or bad experiences? Anything you want to share with the rest of us? Not at this point? Well, that's okay. If anything occurs to you, by the way, at any point as I'm talking on, feel free to just raise your hand and interrupt me, and we can stop and address what you want to talk about. So let's go on then about this contacting process. If you don't have a kind of personal connection with these publishers' representatives yet, one good way of establishing that is to go to these publishers' websites and to look for information about how to get in touch with them. And I'm just going to show a couple of examples of this from, well, I've listed three different publishers here. Not because they're the only publishers in the world by any means, there's many others, but as sort of examples of this process. Here's Paul Grave Macmillan, for instance, one of the major British publishers of academic texts, really a lot of output every year. On their web pages, you will find this section, in this case it's called Authors, Why Publish with Paul Grave Macmillan, which gives you information about the place, tries to persuade you to talk to them in particular. Another example, Routledge, another very major publisher, certainly in terms of the output, a lot of books that come out every year. For Authors, this section is called, particularly typically the publisher's web pages have a section like that, For Authors, in this one, Why Publish With Us, in the case of Paul Grave Macmillan. And here again, there's different kinds of subcategories, how to publish with us, promoting your book, publishing guidelines, and how to publish with us in particular here will give you further instructions about how to contact them more formally. Then there's also a publisher that I've got some experience in dealing with, Oxford University Press, their pages as well with similar kinds of headings and so on. And really any publisher, their web pages will have these kinds of links. And the kind of key information from these pages that I'd like to highlight a little bit has to do, first of all, with how to contact editors in this way, and secondly, the kinds of guidelines for putting together a book proposal that these web pages will also provide. So, again, one way to contact an editor is through this way, by going to their web pages, finding the kind of contact information that require from there, and then getting in touch with the right person. And obviously, before you do that, it's important that you have a pretty good idea of what your project is about, what it is that you're doing. They don't really want to hear some sort of vague thoughts, I might do this or I might do that. It has to be a fairly defined idea, preferably, well, as advanced as possible in terms of the conceptualization and realization of it. But you can certainly contact them before the entire manuscript is ready. It doesn't necessarily have to be even written yet. It can be at the stage where you're putting together an idea and trying to figure out how to go forward with it with the publishers. But it's important to have a fairly clear sense of what it is that you want to do. And then once you have that, you can get in touch with the editors. And here, for instance, I'm going to the Paul Grave Macmillan page. If you click on Contact Us here, it will take you further to another page where they're asking for basic information about you, first name, last name, email address, where are you from, what it is that you work on, what your sort of area of scholarship is, and then a brief summary of the project. And this is one way of getting in touch with the sort of right people within the particular publishing house. Or obviously, if you know the name of a given editor already, you can sort of email them directly. But from these web pages, you can often find the contact, or you can always really find the contact information quite easily. And the same information you can also get from the Routledge pages. something presumably here under how to publish with us. Yep, there's various links here. Editorial contacts you can find. Or here at the Oxford UP page. Similar thing. Submitting a proposal, instructions for authors, this sort of thing. Just about all the publishers have this kind of thing as a matter of course on their web pages, and you can easily find it there. Right. Well, then let's assume that you're ready to move forward with a book proposal. Maybe you've already been in initial contact with a particular editor or editors, talked to them, decided which publisher might be suitable for you, perhaps received some encouragement from an editor already. And here, the book proposal would then be the next stage, really. And here, again, any publisher's websites will have fairly detailed information and instructions regarding this. There's some variation in this. Some publishers, many of them, in fact, want you to fill out a particular form, which you can normally download from their web pages, often in Word format, and then fill it out with, just going to be, in this case, kind of given headings about different aspects of the project that they want you to fill out. Sometimes you can write the more sort of free form proposal where you just explain more freely what it is that you're trying to propose to the publishers. But basically the core content, in whatever the precise format of the proposal is, the core content tends to be pretty much the same across the board. They will want to know about what the project is about, what the kind of scope and content of it is, its significance, and here it really is useful always to think in sort of wide terms. Even if it is a fairly specific, say, case study of a particular issue, try to link it to something bigger, which you probably already have done in any case, and then explain it to the publishers. They'll usually want to know about competing studies that have already been completed. So it's a kind of literature review, but in a much shorter, more concise form. And also related to that, about the potential market and the kinds of audiences that your book is likely to have. For instance, students, if it's an academic study, that would it have maybe some textbook-type potential? Could it be relevant to courses at undergraduate or postgraduate levels? What sorts of scholars are interested in it? In what fields? Is it sort of sociology, political science, history, perhaps several different areas of scholarship at the same time? Usually a book can have appeal to many different directions. So that kind of stuff, market audiences, who might be interested in this book. Obviously important to the publishers because they need to be able to sell it, at least to academic libraries, if not beyond that, but preferably also some other people might buy it. And then they will want some information about you, who you are, where you are based, what sort of career stage you're at. Is this your dissertation that you're trying to publish? Is it another project beyond that or next to that? And quite often, they also ask for suggested peer reviewers, which can be a somewhat trickier thing. You don't necessarily have to suggest these. And often, if say you're just finishing your PhD, it's going to be a little bit difficult to perhaps know what all these different people in the field who potentially could review, what they're like, would they be suitable or not. So you don't necessarily have to provide those suggestions. But if you have some people in mind that you think would be useful as reviewers, then by all means you can suggest them. They shouldn't, however, be particularly close to you, such as your PhD supervisors obviously cannot be normally the reviewers for press, or your best friends or relatives or anything of that sort. But it is possible, it's perfectly legitimate that you may have met these people, collaborated with them in some form. They're fairly small circles in academia, so to get kind of complete separation is often very difficult. So these kinds of elements are involved. the contents of the project, its significance, information about competing titles, information about what sort of market you have in mind for your book, information about you, yourself. And really this proposal thing is an absolutely crucial part of trying to get a book published. This is where you have to convince the publishers of the value of your project to make them realize that they want to go ahead with this. So it's worth investing quite a lot of time and effort in this. It's kind of like writing a high-stakes grant proposal, perhaps, where you kind of do spend a lot of time, you think about it, you write a draft, then you write another draft, you polish the text, maybe show it to friends and colleagues before you send it in to get some other people's perspectives and feedback. And another thing to bear in mind, it's important to follow the instructions of the publisher very closely. If they want you to use a particular form that you can find on the internet web pages, then do use that form. If they don't want you to use a particular form, but they want you to address certain issues, which is almost always really the case, often the kinds of issues that I just mentioned, do make sure that you address them all. It's useful to put little subcategories in the text or headings to indicate where you are doing that for which type of issue. And sometimes, increasingly often really, publishers also want some kind of samples of your writing. A sample chapter, perhaps, or two, or maybe an article that's related to the project that's already been published. Something where they can get an idea of your writing and how you approach this stuff, what kind of results you're bringing out. And in many cases also, particularly if it's the first book that you're publishing, they may want the entire manuscript before they make any decisions about a contract as such. So the proposal pretty much always has to come first. You need to start with that, with a concise explanation of what it is that you're doing. But the publishers may then also, before they make any final decisions, ask for more text, possibly the entire manuscript. But that really depends on the publisher and on the book, and it's hard to predict in advance. But the proposal, in any case, is the kind of starting point. And as I think we already talked about last time, it's also important here to kind of comply with the etiquette, which is that you're not supposed to approach more than one publisher with the same proposal at the same time. So go for the main publisher that you have in mind first. Communicate with them first. If they turn you down, then turn to others. But don't send the proposal to three or four places at the same time, because that is just not considered good practice. And if the publishers find out about that, they're not going to be very happy and may just tell you to go away because they've discovered this happening. And again, let's look at the Palgrave Macmillan site here as an example of this. Here we are. So this is the author's page, Why Publish with Palgrave Macmillan. And here's a link here to submit a proposal. Let's see if I get it to work. No. Why is that? Okay, I can't seem to get it to open. Let's see if I can get one of the other ones to. Well, let's try this here. Open. This is from right. So these are Routledge instructions then. It doesn't really matter which one it is, just to give you a sense of what to expect here. So here's some instructions from them. Proposals would be, for them, 3 to 6 pages. That's often a pretty good, under 10 pages, usually not more than that anyway. Then they explain what the sort of 5 main areas in their particular way of approaching this are. Statement of aims. So this is kind of the broad context of what it is that you're trying to do. Then a detailed synopsis, which means a more in-depth description of what you have in mind, a chapter breakdown, a brief explanation of what each chapter is going to contain, the basic structure really of the book and the chapters. And then, as I mentioned, point number three here, a description of the target market. So again, what the kind of audience is that this book would be addressed to, who would want to read it, perhaps even buy it. The main competing titles, what the other studies out there in the field are that are closest to your work and how your own proposed book is different from them, or maybe challenges them, in some ways does something different than the main competition. And then also, the thing that I didn't really mention before, but that's quite important, the timeline, how long it's going to take you to finish this book, what you have in mind in terms of how quickly you're going to finish it, and then other stuff that they want to know roughly at this stage. Also about diagrams, illustrations, is there going to be a lot of photographs, for instance, that you want to include? Because those kinds of things can have a major impact on the cost of producing the book, and so on. And here's also a particular section about dissertations here, actually, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more just in a minute. But here, as I was mentioning before, it says we prefer to see the entire manuscript as well as the proposal. So that's often the case with dissertations or first books. And also an explanation of just what you would change in it, how you would modify the dissertation to be a book, because the expectation is pretty much always that it's going to be a little bit different, at least, than the original dissertation. And then often a CV is also requested. Really, each publisher has slightly different instructions, slightly different guidelines, but the kind of main core content is pretty much the same. So as I was saying, PhD, thesis, dissertations are a particular category here. In many ways, an important category. Quite a lot of important studies have started their life as PhD dissertations and then have been modified or changed in some way to become books later. And that still continues to be the case. However, it's in some ways an increasingly tight market, so publishers are getting more selective about which dissertations they publish than they used to be maybe about 30, 40 years ago. And it's pretty much always the case that fairly extensive revisions are expected from the dissertation before it can become a monograph, a separate book publication. And the idea here generally is to make the study look a little bit less like a thesis, which means that you have to normally get rid of, in Finnish dissertations, for instance, it's typical to have sort of chapter one and then subdivision 1.1 and then perhaps 1.1.2 and 1.1.3 and so on. Those kinds of things they pretty much always want you to get rid of, which is more like a formatting thing. And then also typically things like literature review, you often have to make it more compact. Often, certainly in sort of mainstream history publications, they also typically do not really want a very extensive methodological preface. That is often important in the dissertation, but this may vary between different fields, but often in history, for instance, you need to be more concise about those kinds of things. They're typically more interested in the sort of arguments and content and so on, rather than extensive methodological debates, unless, of course, the book itself is sort of about methodology, but then it's different. So there's revisions that you normally have to do with these kinds of things. And the idea really that the publishers have in mind is to make make the book as appealing as possible to as wide an audience as possible, which is important to them from sales, from a sales perspective, but also important to the author in terms of getting their work wide exposure and getting people to read it. So it's important to bear this in mind, that probably before a PhD thesis can appear as a book, some time will pass. You will need to make some changes, adjustments, perhaps expand it or maybe narrow it, depending on what the publishers want exactly. But to be open to these kinds of discussions with them. And also, it's good really to talk about this with other people as well, your supervisors, friends and colleagues and so on, to learn about their experiences along the way. Right. So then, what happens after that? This is much like what we already heard about last week. Let's say that you've got the proposal ready. You've been in touch with the publishers, representatives, I don't know, at Palgrave or wherever. They've given you the green light to send them a proposal and said that they're going to have a look at it. So you've spent a lot of time writing it and polishing it and getting it ready, and you send it in. Then the responsible editor at the publishers, or it might be more than one editor, if, for instance, there's a particular book series with a publisher, then they'd probably have, for instance, a history editor at the press, but then also additional editors for that particular series. So the responsible history editor in this case and the series editor or editors would sort of confer and together decide whether to proceed with this proposal or not. Or if it's not for a particular series, then it's normally up to the sort of main responsible field editor with the publishers. So they can either say, no, this isn't quite right for us, and they'll normally do that in a very polite kind of way, and often suggest other possible publishers that you might want to approach. And again, do not send the proposal to more than one publisher at the same time for consideration. That's not really good form. But if they say yes, then we move on to the next stage, which we've covered in this course in terms of journals, but also last week we talked about this in terms of books, edited volumes. You get to the peer review stage. And here, really much like we talked about already, the editor will send your proposal to or additional texts, if they've been included or required, to external expert readers who maybe you may have suggested some of them, or you can do that normally. You could also normally say, please do not use a particular person. That's also okay. If, I don't know, you've had a run-in at a conference with someone and they really hate you for whatever reason, you can say, please do not send my manuscript to Mr. X or Ms. Y, because we don't even have to explain why. You can just say, please don't. And they will pretty much always respect that. Or you can more positively suggest people that you would like to have the manuscript sent to. Whether you do or don't, they're going to do that anyway, to send your proposal and whatever additional materials there might be to one or more external reviewers. It's more normally between 2 and 3 or 4, although sometimes it could be just 1. It depends on the publisher and the particular situation. And then some time will pass, probably at least a month or 2, sometimes longer. But if about, say, 3 months have passed and you haven't heard anything, you can certainly get in touch with the editor at the press and ask what's going on. A bit like Tuomas was telling us last time regarding the sort of big delays with their edited volume. So eventually, hopefully within about 2 or 3 months, you'll get feedback from the readers and from the editor in charge at the press, and you'll get all these materials. They're probably going to include both sort of praise for what you're doing, but also criticism or sort of suggestions for what you might want to think about, what you might want to change. And then you're expected to respond to that. It's probably a good idea to take a little bit of time, not respond the same day. you might feel a bit upset. Maybe you'll feel very happy. I don't know. Either way, it's a good idea to sort of step back from it a little bit and give yourself a bit of time to sort of digest the feedback and to think about it. But you do need to respond if you want to proceed with the project with this publisher. Of course, you could just walk away and say, no, I don't really like the feedback. But in most cases, it's advisable to kind of try to stick with it if it seems at all sort of reasonable what they've been saying. So it's expected, really, and more or less required that you're accommodating, particularly if there's more than one reviewer and they have very similar comments. That's important, and do pay attention to the kinds of things that they raise. Sometimes the different reviewers can say very different things, sometimes contradictory things. That also happens. And in those kinds of cases, the editor from the publisher will often sort of mediate a little bit and tell you, maybe think about this particularly or that. And then in the response that you eventually write to them, which is often just 2-3 pages maximum, not much more than that, you explain what you are going to do, how you're going to respond to the suggestions that you've received. But you don't just kind of slavishly have to do everything that's mentioned in those reports. It's perfectly fine and very common, in fact, to say yes to some things, but also have some reservations, or to say, I will do this and that, but I'm not going to do whatever else. As long as you explain why that is the case, why it's important to you to stick to your guns on a particular aspect of the project. Once you've sent in the response, if things go well, normally you would then get a contract for the book. Then you would go ahead and write the book, unless it's already written. And when the manuscript is ready, one or more peer reviewer will look at it again for a kind of control read. Often it's one of the same experts or two of the same experts that they've already used previously. And then once you've passed that stage, the production process can begin, much as was discussed last week. But almost always at the stage when the final manuscript is sent in by you and you get feedback on that, there's still usually some things that you need to do at that stage as well. They will suggest some at least minor changes to it. So it's going to take a little bit of time at that point as well to get the very final thing ready. So overall, it does take time. Often we're talking years from the time when you work on the book proposal to the time that the actual book then goes into copy editing and eventually print. So that's quite a lot of information on a sort of general, broad level about the process. And maybe at this point I'll stop and see if you've got any comments or observations or questions about what I've been saying before I go into the sort of more personal experiences of mine. Yeah. Just bring you the microphone.
Thank you. I have three questions, of which two probably are kind of stupid, but I'll ask them anyway. So
there are no stupid questions.
All right. Yeah, well, we all know that's not true. First, why are PhD theses such an important starting point, considering that they are freely available, at least most of them are freely available at the university website. Mm-hmm. And although I understand that there will be extensive revisions so that the book version will probably not be recognized or recognizable as a thesis, but why? Why is it so common to, or why people want to publish and even read mm-hmm. book versions?
Okay.
Thesis. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the first. That's the first question.
Okay.
Yeah. Why?
Why don't maybe just ask them all three, and then
right.
I'll ask them.
All right. Then the second one is: are there differences between how a monograph and an article dissertation would be treated in this way, considering that they're quite different as products. Mm-hmm. Are there differences? And then third one, let's think that I would submit a manuscript which would have multiple problems, which would be really bad, and I just wouldn't know it because I would be under the illusion that it's really great, and then they would send me a mail saying, "No, we don't want to publish this," but being very polite about it, so I wouldn't get the hint from that. My question is that if this would be the case, would they really give like constructive feedback or at this point, or would they tell that this manuscript is bad, or would they just politely say that we don't want it, but perhaps you should bother someone else, or how?
Okay. All right, excellent questions.
Yeah, great.
let me just start with the last one. I think honestly it depends. It depends on what their opinion of the manuscript is. Also depends on what the editor as a person is like. I mean, they could just say, if they think it's just hopeless, they could just say, sorry, we're not interested in this manuscript. And you might get a very sort of concise message that doesn't really give you much in the way of feedback beyond that. That happens. But usually they at least will, at least on a general level, say why, what's wrong. Sort of like, for instance, the topic doesn't fit with what they publish, or it's just too much like a dissertation, or something along those lines, which isn't that useful specifically, but at least gives you a general sense of why they don't want it. And the kind of further into the process you get, the more feedback you will get. So if it goes to the external readers, the peer reviewers, then you will in any case get a report from each of them, and they're often several pages long and will tell you in considerable depth what they think is good and what isn't good. But if it gets rejected at the first hurdle, so to speak, by the main editor, then you will not hear as much because they're not really field experts. They're just sort of publishing professionals who have a sense of what they want and what looks like a solid project and what they don't think looks very solid. But they usually err on the side of, I don't know what to call it, not generosity exactly, but sort of openness. So if they're not sure, they're more likely to send it to a reader or readers rather than not. So, and then the second question, if I do them backwards, monograph versus article dissertation. I think an article dissertation would be difficult to get published in book form as such, or you would have to really work quite a lot on establishing how it needs to be one sort of unit, because it's already been published partly as articles, maybe all of it has been published as articles, so it would be more of a kind of essay, you know, have sort of senior scholars in particular sort of write these essay collections, which is sort of stuff they wrote 10 years ago or 5 years ago or 2 years ago, all put together and then somehow connected with an introductory chapter. So that kind of thing would be a possible way of publishing an article dissertation. But I think with an article dissertation, it's better to really concentrate on the articles being published as such. And then, of course, you could develop a separate book or related book from that, from some of them anyway. But I don't think the monograph publishing format would really work so well there. And then why would you want to publish a PhD thesis as a book? Well, again, a good question. I mean, in some places, some countries like Finland, these theses are very easily and readily available online, but that's not always the case. For instance, in Great Britain, they normally aren't. And you don't have full access to them. You can put a kind of you can sort of make a ruling yourself that your thesis is not going to be accessible to anyone really, except with a special permission for like a year or a year and a half. so that you have a sort of time to develop it further. Or in the US, PhD theses are only available normally if you pay for it through a sort of centralized service where everybody has to send their thesis, but that then sells them on, which is in some ways not very fair, but it's just how it's done. So not all PhD theses are available online. And even if they are, it depends on the field, but certainly in my own field, history, traditionally getting a kind of book out has been pretty significant as a kind of marker in your career development. Obviously, you can also do the same by publishing good articles, but still the sort of wider context of a book and getting it out there through a publisher into libraries and so on and in sort of concrete book form can be kind of good for in career terms, and also I think sort of intellectually it can give wider exposure to your study, because if a publisher is sort of announcing worldwide on their web pages that this book is now out, it's very likely that more people will notice it than if it's there only in the sort of library of your university where you wrote the PhD thesis. So in a way, it's a kind of win-win, because you'll still have the PhD thesis there that's available, but then you can also develop it further into a book that's a little bit different.
I think that Tuomas said something about this last time, but I did notice that in some publishers' guidelines there was the idea that in the phase when you are doing the proposals, you already have to be a salesman.
That you have to be, sorry.
Salesman, that you have to make a blurb about 200 words or something like that, and also sales pitch for the publication. Mm-hmm. Is that normal?
Okay, thanks. So the question had to do with the degree to which you have to be a kind of saleswoman or salesman, salesperson in. Already at the proposal stage. Yes, they will sometimes ask you for at least a kind of brief summary that could be a sort of marketing blurb at that stage. But normally most of that stuff is done closer, after the book has already been accepted by the press and when it's being sort of made ready for publication, then you will normally have to send, or always I think, have to send different lengths versions of a kind of marketing statement, like a short one and a longer one and keywords and things like that, that will then, at least in theory, make it easier for the press to market the book. So usually not too much of that is required early on, other than perhaps a kind of brief abstract type statement. And then those materials are used by the publishers in their kind of pre-publication brochures and online and so on, where they can sort of advertise the book before it actually appears. Yeah.
So, okay, if and when PhD theses are a good way to have a first book publication, but on the other hand, the publication process takes years, probably. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend starting thinking about this already before finishing the dissertation or only afterwards? I'm thinking of the four-year deadline here as well, when you need to write a good dissertation. So is it even possible to think about the dissertation in book form?
Mm. Okay, another very good question about the practical side of things. Thank you. I think probably given the sort of time pressures that are now placed on the dissertation writing, research and writing, you really do need to focus pretty much on that primarily during the time that you're doing the PhD. But then I think more towards the end of that process when you've got most of the manuscript ready, or perhaps all of the manuscript ready, when you're waiting, say, for the PhD defense. Normally there, sometime, often months pass between you delivering the final manuscript or the manuscript before the final version, when you make maybe some final changes to it, and then have the final one, and then it's going to the to the readers to prepare for the defense. I'd say more towards that part of the process, in the sort of final stages, that's when you could really start thinking more about this, thinking about whether you might want to begin to approach publishers, or at least think about writing a book proposal. But I think it's probably not a very good idea to spend too much time on that very early on, because it can sort of distract you a bit. But you can certainly start thinking about it before it's all in the bag, so to speak, and everything's finished. Okay, then. Thank you very much. Very good good questions from you. And now I will then sort of get autobiographical and hopefully not kind of too self-indulgent, but maybe some kind of personal experiences could be useful in illustrating how this works, and also some of the delays and problems in this. So briefly, first of all, I wrote my own PhD a long time ago now, in the last millennium, finished in 1999, just before the turn of the century, which had to do with a sort of German political, societal and political history after the Second World War, consequences of the war. And that then appeared as a book finally in 2003, so it took 4 years, a bit more than 4 years really, for it to come out. So it was a long process. And I finished the PhD. I was then lucky enough to get a teaching position very soon afterwards. So I was very preoccupied with that. Took up most of my time to get teaching going and to do everything related to that. So it was probably about a year before I even started approaching publishers. And I got two or three rejections first from particular presses, which said, they didn't actually give that much feedback. To go back to your question, they just said, this doesn't really look right for us, so thank you, but no. So I talked to kind of more senior colleagues in my department, and one of them then suggested that I'd approach Oxford UP. The colleague had kind of worked with them previously and was very nice in that he said that, you know, why don't I mention his name, that he had encouraged me to get in touch with them. And I'm sure that helped a bit. So I sent in the proposal after kind of initially inquiring about that. And then they wanted the whole text of the dissertation as well, along with the proposal and kind of explanation of what the book was going to look like, including the kind of changes that I proposed to make vis-a-vis the dissertation, and they wanted the dissertation as well. So they sent it out to, I guess, three readers, and I got reports eventually. I don't know, it probably took a few months. And I wrote a response, more or less saying that I'll do anything you want, just give me the contract. And then I did eventually get the contract, but it still took quite a while to get the manuscript done. I had to revise parts of it and also add material, because the dissertation went up to the end of the 60s, but the book more or less goes up to 1990 and the kind of end of the Cold War. So I had to do an additional chapter and add bits and pieces and sort of change the wider framework a little bit and so on and so forth. So it was pretty slow and sometimes quite frustrating, but it finally worked out and got published. So it was a kind of happy ending to the story. But yeah, I guess just to kind of underline the fact that at least some rejections are likely, and it's going to take some time. It's good to kind of persevere with it, and also listen to advice from more experienced people who can maybe steer you in the right direction in terms of which publishers to think about or what to do to the manuscript, and then to kind of be fairly accommodating towards what the editors and peer reviewers say. Yeah, and it does take time. But I actually wanted to talk more about a somewhat more recent book, again, about the process primarily, mostly because for this book I actually have all the most of the documentation, so I can show you some of it and focus mostly on the early stages of approaching the publisher and securing a contract, the kinds of things that I talked about more generally just a while ago. And this is another book that came out itself several years ago now called Death at the Berlin Wall, which was about, well, what the title tells you. It was about violent death at the Berlin Wall during the Cold War and their sort of uses by East and West Germany, mostly West Germany, but also East Germany, different cases in different ways to attack the other side and to kind of try to build legitimacy at home as the kind of better Germany. And I'm not going to get into the details of the arguments or anything because that's not really relevant here, but more the sort of process of it. So here, it took quite a while to kind of develop this. I kind of got the original idea while I was working on revising the dissertation, actually. And then started slowly collecting material. And actually was able to collect most of the archival and other stuff before I did the actual book proposal. And the proposal itself was written a while ago now, 2007 in the summer, and I sent it to the same press where I'd done my first book. That also, by the way, is often useful if you've published once with a place. You often have established a kind of relationship with them, and it's then often easier to deal with them in the future as well. But here, mostly what I wanted to do is have a look at a kind of concrete example of a book proposal. Not because this is somehow a perfect proposal, which it isn't, but just to kind of show you what that particular one looked like, which then did end up being accepted and turning into an actual book. And can maybe look at particularly at what's sort of in the proposal in terms of the structure and the content. So here it is. Yeah, great. Is that, I don't know if that's legible at all in the back. Is it? Good. Oh, that's a bit too big. but I will also put this also on Moodle along with the slides. So this was the proposal as I did it over 10 years ago now. Victims of the Berlin Wall, it also had a subheading at that point. And so basically there's a kind of rationale for the book where I tried to start with a kind of broad question which had to do with processes of collective identity building and political legitimation in Cold War Europe. And then sort of narrow it down from there to, in a way, to kind of justify what I was doing with this big question, and say that I was going to try to do that by looking at this concrete case of the two Germanys that were very actively competing with each other over these kinds of things, and more specifically at how they made use of these violent deaths at the wall in Berlin. Then there's some more justification of why that and why it's important and relevant, according to me. And then going on to kind of try to argue that although this is an interesting and important issue, it hasn't yet been analyzed enough, that there's literature out there, as there is on just about anything, really, but that that literature doesn't address the kinds of things sufficiently that I want to do in this book. And then there's various references to some of the existing literature. And then, of course, this my book will provide da-da-dum, so kind of claiming things that your book will do, kind of new perspective, elaborating a little bit on the goals in terms of identity building, legitimation in Cold War Europe, looking more specifically at Berlin as a kind of microcosm of some of that, and also to sort of compare East and West Germany, so to have a kind of comparative perspective in here as well. And then these claims about how this will make a significant contribution, da-da-da, in this and that respect. So that's a kind of opening, longish section about the rationale, general rationale, why this book should be written, and so on. And then there's another bit about the particular approach that is going to be built around case studies, about particular cases where people died at the Berlin Wall in connection with different sorts of escape attempts and other related events. Looking at these concrete cases, but then also making broader arguments on the basis of that, about what was going on in Germany and more generally in the Cold War in Europe. And then there's a sort of breakdown of what I said that the chapters were going to look like. And at this point, I said there was going to be 9. There were actually only 8 in the end, and so on. But anyway, sort of in the direction of what it was going to be. Then a bit about sources, important always in history anyway. So I was kind of explaining what material I'd collected and what I was hoping to still add to that, what the source base was going to be. And then the readership and market, about students, scholars, but also maybe somewhat optimistically that there might be other readers as well interested in reading about this. And then this often, always really quite important bit about competing books, where I went through some of the books that were out or were about to come out, like this last one here, and then finally a timetable. So I was writing this in the summer of 2007, and I was promising that it was going to be ready in a year, which turned out to be optimistic. And then finally a little bit about me, just brief background about my background. So it's very much the sort of basic components that we looked at before that normally are expected in a book proposal. Written in this particular way here, sometimes they want them in a slightly different order or different format, but basically these kinds of things. And the chapter breakdown, all that, didn't turn out to be exactly like that in the final product, but more or less. And the delivery date, as I said, I was being a little bit optimistic, but, well, oh well. So, what happened then? Was that there were readers' reports which came back actually quite quickly. It only took about 2 months, so that was quite lucky. Probably helped that they only had to read the fairly brief report and not much else. I think I'd included a brief or writing sample as well related to the project of stuff that I'd already written, but certainly not the whole thing because I didn't have it yet. So there were 3 reports that came back, which raised different things, not all the same things, but all kind of raising certain points. I don't actually have the actual responses from the readers anymore. They were email attachments, and I think when I moved here to Jyväskylä. I lost them somewhere. I don't know what happened to them. But I do have the response that I wrote to them. So maybe I can show you that as well. Again, to stress, it's not some sort of a perfect model at all, but just an illustration of what I was saying before about, on the one hand, making concessions to the reviewers, and many of the things that they raised really were very useful and helpful, but at the same time, not agreeing to do everything that they asked for, which is also legitimate, saying that you cannot do quite everything that's being asked. So here is the response that I wrote, which is 2 or 3 pages long. I forget exactly, something like that. And so I started with, which I think is in some form a good idea, kind of by thanking them and saying how helpful it has been and how grateful I am. Even at first when I saw the reports, I was thinking like, "Arr!" But, you know, it's good to be polite and thank them for their contributions. And then I was trying to raise the kind of, or combine the main points that they had brought up and put them under 2 or 3 different categories rather than kind of individually respond to about 15 different things. So there were a number of things. One was the sort of wider Cold War context, which one of the readers had wanted me to make sure that I include enough of that, not just the Berlin situation, but the wider context as well. So I said, yes, that's a great idea. I will do that. Also, the same reader, I guess, had raised gender, generation, families, ethnicity, these kinds of considerations. So it's not just sort of politics, but more of these sort of more complicated human angles as well. So again, I was saying that that's good, and I will definitely try to do that as much as possible, and gave an example of how I was hoping to do that. Another point that they'd raised, given that the victims was such a prominent part of the title, was the sort of definition of victims: who is a victim, who counts as a victim, what kinds of categories can you use here. So I tried to address that. And here, responding to another reader, reader B, sort of giving a little bit of explanation of how I was hoping to do that. And then two of the readers had also asked me to do something else, to think about people who'd been killed, not in Berlin, but in other places along the border between the two states, East and West Germany. And here I was kind of trying to say no a bit. So I started by saying this is a very useful point, I intend to talk about it a little bit, but then was trying to explain why I actually want to keep the focus on Berlin and not widen it to the entire German-German border, because I argued that that would make it a little bit too broad and be a little too much. And there was also another point that reader B raised that I wasn't entirely in agreement with, and I was trying to again explain why I don't want to do or cannot do really everything that that reader had asked for. And then finally they asked for me to elaborate on just precisely how my book was different from one of the other books about to come out at the time, so I did that as well. So it was a few pages of trying to respond to what the reviewers had said, agreed to most of it, but not quite all of it. Right. Okay, so then I did get a contract on the basis of that and then started writing. Like I said, I promised to get the thing ready within a year, but of course it took basically 2 years until 2009, not 2008. And with somewhat different contents. It was more or less what I'd said, but there were some variations. And the main problem was that I'd said that the whole thing was going to be 95,000 words, but when I got the first draft, it was actually 150,000 words. So, oops, it was a bit longer than it was supposed to be. But I sent that thing in because I didn't really know what else to do, and the editor sent it to one of these original three readers who said that, yes, it has to be shorter, and gave some suggestions about what I might cut. But it was generally a kind of encouraging report, just with that in mind. And so after that, it was then meant months of editing, trying to cut out words and see how I could say things more concisely, which was not always fun, but probably improved the text. And then it was finally at the end of 2009, after about 6 months of sort of editing it back, that I had it ready, and then it took another year before it appeared, just at the end of 2010. So it's a good outcome, and I'm happy that it came out, but there were some sort of annoyances, a bit like what Tuomas was saying last week, similar things perhaps in some ways. Editors at the press came and went. There were three different editors that the book was dealt with by, which was a bit problematic in several ways, but also in the sense that the original editor who had been most interested in it because he'd commissioned the book, he left, and then the following editors didn't really have as much to do with this project. So, you know, they were taking it forward, but I think they were a bit less interested in it than the original person who, I don't know where he went, but he wasn't there anymore. And then there was also, maybe as a result of that, somewhat conflicting advice. The readers, particularly the one reader who then read it again when it was too long, kind of suggested that I should try to make it marketable to a wide audience. So he said, get rid of a lot of the historiographical discussion of previous literature and try to limit that, which I did. But then the press decided that it actually had to be a kind of strictly academic book in terms of marketing. So then it kind of fell a little bit between the stools because I'd taken out the sort of heavier academic stuff, but then the press thought that it should be a heavier academic book. So it was a bit annoying. But again, it came out. That's the main thing. And the copy editing sometimes was problematic. At one point, the copy editor deleted a footnote from one of the chapters, which then meant that all of the remaining footnotes were out of sequence. So every footnote referred to the wrong place. Fortunately, I noticed it, because otherwise it could have been quite embarrassing. Someone could have said, he's made up his sources, none of these match. And like I said, it wasn't really, there were some disagreements about who the target audience should be. Was it just an academic book or not? But anyway, it's out there, and that's in some ways really the main thing. But I guess the kind of experiences and lessons are what I've already said, that publishing a monograph is a long process by definition and quite complicated, and you do need to kind of stick with it, have some perseverance, even at moments when it seems like this is never going to end, and some flexibility in terms of responding to the suggestions that you get from the editor, from the expert reviewers. You need to be open to revising some of your arguments or at least making adjustments. And sometimes you need a little bit of a thick skin as well if they criticize you for things that kind of hurt a bit, where you maybe are particularly proud about something that you've done and then they say, this doesn't work at all, you know, rethink it. But really, in many ways, the sort of acquiring the contract is the key step in the publication process, because after that, the publisher also is committed to this. So they've signed this agreement. They're often, or pretty much always, quite flexible about deadlines, as long as it isn't for a particular event, say, to commemorate some sort of 100th anniversary of a particular event. It doesn't matter so much to them whether it comes out in June of this year or May of next year, but they do want it to come out. So they'll kind of keep bugging you and saying, how's that manuscript doing? Is it ready now? And you can tell them, no, not quite. I'll need a few more months. But once you've signed that contract, there is that interest in the project also on the side of the publisher, so that is quite an important aspect of it. And like I said, I'll put the not only the slides, but also that proposal of mine and the response to the readers up on Moodle, just a sort of examples of the genre. But any sort of comments or questions or observations before? We have a few minutes anyway. Yeah.
A really simple question. What's a good contract, like in terms of copyright and so on, to guarantee your own right?
Yeah, the question was, what is a good contract? Good point. I mean, basically, in academic publishing, especially if it's a first book, you will not get any money out of it. Or if you will, it's absolutely minimal amounts. So sort of financial profit is not a factor, really. It can be perhaps later on in a kind of more broad audience book, but in a monograph type thing, it's not. And normally, you would retain the copyright. So the sort of intellectual property right is yours and really has to be yours. The press can't claim that. So if they try to do that, that would be a big problem. But if they're a legitimate publisher, they wouldn't do that. They own the right to the book as it appears. So the kind of layout of the pages and so on. But the ideas and the actual text, apart from the publication and the sort of format that it takes there, is yours. So that's the kind of key issue. And normally with a sort of major publisher, it would just be a case of them bringing out the book, covering the costs, and so on. But if the author is going to make any money out of these kinds of monographs, it's normally only if the book comes out in paperback, and even then, it would be quite limited. So that's about the best I can say. If you have a more commercial project in mind, something that does have more market value or is aimed at a kind of bigger audience, then it's a different story. But I actually don't really have, I've never really written a book like that, so I don't really know. Then often it's good to have an agent or some sort of legal advice anyway. Okay, and one more thing. This is the final lecture of the course. And as in the previous sections of the course, for instance, with Laura, you had a little assignment to do. And I've also got one for you. It's brief and I think quite straightforward, and it will not take you a huge amount of time, but it's a way of controlling that people have actually been here or listened to the lectures in some other form and done the work. So I'd like you to do one of these two things, just a half to one page piece of writing on either a kind of reflection on that balance between journals and books in your field, along the lines that we did in groups last week, which is more important in your field of study, journals or books. What are some of the most important books, one or two, in your own field, and what sort of publishers, are there any particular publishers that seem especially strong in your field? These kinds of things, half a page to a page. Or, based more on today's topic, again, just a kind of brief reflection on if you want to do a monograph, want to, what would be your sort of idea? What would be the topic? It can be your dissertation, can be something else, just briefly explained. And also give some indication of what a potential publisher might be, what concrete publisher. Perhaps it's one of the three that I've shown before. It can be something entirely different as well. So one or the other. You don't need to do both, just one, and half a page to one page. And please just send those to my email address, which is here. I'm going to put this on Moodle so you can find it there as well, by Friday of next week, if possible. If that deadline is a problem, then get in touch with me and we can arrange something else in terms of the deadline, I mean. Okay, well, thank you very much. That's it for the lectures for this course. Hope it's been in some ways useful for you. And I'll put the materials to Moodle probably later today. Thanks.